owned and operated. Coming up next, Air Cascadia is off. Instead, we'll be hearing an excerpt from Peace Talks Radio, the series on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution. And after that, Locus Focus with host Barbara Bernstein.
In the shadow of the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, the radio and online series Peace Talks Radio was begun to preserve a bit of the media landscape for talk about peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution strategies. The goal of the program has been to explore how we can reduce conflict, both inside ourselves and between each other, as well as tell the stories of peacemakers throughout history, the famous and the less well-known, to shine a light on the enormous variety of peace work that is going on in our world. This edition of Peace Talks Radio presents more engaging moments featuring our guests of the first 10 years of the program, 2002 to 2012. If you'd lost a loved one in the terrorist attacks of 2001, how would you have responded? We found that some victims' family members channeled their grief into work for peace by joining a group called September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows. Among the group members we spoke to in 2007 was Anne Muldery, whose son Stephen was trapped in a conference room in one of the twin towers of the World Trade Center and died that day.
As far as enemies and who we view as the cause of our troubles, I'll tell this little story because it was one of the first instances of my being brave enough to speak my mind after my son's death. And I spoke my mind to a truly treasured person who came to me and said, "What they have done to your son is so terrible, and I know they are in hell." And I loved this person who said those words to me, and I knew it was an attempt to comfort me. It was a desire to comfort me. And I said to him, "All I can say is that my darling son Stephen has gone to another world in the company of the people who did this. And all I can see is him saying to them, as I heard him say to his brothers on the basketball court, 'What'd you do that for?' when somebody had done something they shouldn't have done." I don't know how to explain my faith that that is the case, but I do believe that we all share in the guilt of the violent solutions that are affected in our lifetime. And I believe we can all share in the healing and peace if we will struggle. As Martin Luther King says, and that's the name of our group, wars are poor chisels for carving out peaceful tomorrows. If you think you can make a peaceful tomorrow with a war, you're a foolish person.
We need to work so that we don't have terrorism in the world. But the best way in which to do that is to uphold human rights and international laws, but to deal with the root causes of violence.
Mairead McGuire was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, along with Betty Williams, in 1976 for their work for peace in Northern Ireland. She spoke with Peace Talks Radio in 2006.
And it's very important to ask the question, why do young people use violence? I lived in Northern Ireland, and I seen young people within my own community taking up the gun for the armed struggle in Ireland. And I had to try to understand what possesses a young person to take a gun or to go on hunger strike to the death or to be a suicide bomber. And what I came to realize is that we're each born with an innate sense of justice and human dignity. And when that justice is abused by states or governments and that human dignity is denied, when our basic civil rights to a right to food, a right to home, a right to our own country, when those things are taken away from us, then we get very, very angry. And what do we do with that anger? Because we must, in all consciousness, protest injustice. You cannot sit back and say, it doesn't matter, I'm doing nothing. But when you see injustice, be it poverty, abuse of human rights, be it invasion and occupation of your country, you must resist. But we have to learn the ways of nonviolent resistance because violence is always wrong. you know, armed suicide bombing, that's wrong. But if we don't try to tackle the root causes of why people go to this extreme and call of despair, then I'm afraid we are not going to be able to solve these problems.
Twice, Peace Talks Radio spotlighted the work of a summer peace camp in northern New Mexico that brings together Israeli and Palestinian youth to learn empathy for each other's struggles. Friendships often develop, as it did between Israeli Jew Mai Fried and Palestinian from Gaza Joanna Galeb, who speaks first here with our host Carol Boss about trying to get through an Israeli checkpoint after being ordered to turn back. Arbitrarily, it seemed to her.
All the people in the car, they were in fear, like, Joanna, stop, don't talk to the soldier. He will arrest you, or he will hit you, or shoot you, or something. And my dad was so afraid because, like, stop talking to him. But even that, I talked to him. He don't, like, the soldier, he doesn't speak Arabic, and I don't speak Hebrew. We talked in English. And I tried to communicate with him because I know at the end, even if he told me this is an army and there's no humanity, in some point he's a person, he's a human, and he will think about it.
So beyond the face, beyond his eyes, you were able at that point to see a human being.
Yeah.
And this soldier who may have had a gun that he was holding.
Because, like, I know that every person, like, has a human being inside his heart, but the situation make him be bad or think in this way. So I tried to talk to him about a human being because I know that when he will think about it, he will think in humanity or remember that there's something called humanity. And that's what I learned also from Creativity for Peace.
So I want to ask both of you, do you think, for example, how to listen and how to speak and being able to see the humanity in the other, is that a pathway to peace? Mai?
Absolutely. When you learn to speak your truth, people are listening. When you try to speak like people's truth or like nation's truth, and everybody has his own truth, and just cause kind of like antagonism. But when you speak your own truth, people can notice that you're a human being, and nobody can ignore that for the long term, because everybody has this human being inside of him. So when you show that you are a human being, it's much, much easier to listen to you as a human being and to treat you better. And I think that's a little secret that many people don't know. They try to talk as if they're like representing a group or an idea, instead of just representing themselves.
There are wonderful stories and wonderful scripture in all the religious traditions about the importance of doing more than tolerating somebody from a different background, actually building a relationship with them, actually serving them, actually cooperating with them to serve others.
That's Eboo Patel talking with Suzanne about his Interfaith Youth Corps project in Chicago, which promotes understanding and cooperation between faiths to foster peace.
So in the Holy Quran, one of my favorite lines comes from Surah 49, that God made us different nations and tribes that we may come to know one another.
David Little's a scholar at the U.S. Institute of Peace, and he outlines three possible levels of looking at tolerance. We can be indifferent, we can endure, or we can learn. And in your work at the Interfaith Youth Corps, you really promote that third level of tolerance. You promote learning something from different beliefs. But wouldn't indifference be good enough? Wouldn't it just be great if we didn't kill each other?
At the Interfaith Youth Corps, we don't use the term tolerance. We use the term pluralism. And I think pluralism is both more important and less controversial than how David Little describes tolerance, and I'll tell you why. Because pluralism is a pragmatic situation on earth. It does not describe how we view the other person's theology. It describes the type of sociology we want to build together. It doesn't describe whether we think the other person's version of heaven or salvation is correct. It describes how we want to build a city or a campus or a community with one another. At the Interfaith Youth Corps, we talk of pluralism in the terms of how people from different backgrounds can live together in ways characterized by understanding and cooperation. So when I sit with a Hindu or a Buddhist, I might have dramatic disagreements with his or her theology. In fact, I might have dramatic disagreements with the way that a lot of Muslims interpret their tradition. But my question isn't, do I agree with your theology? My question is, can we live in some sort of mutual trust and loyalty together, number one, as citizens? And number two, are there actually ways that we can find common ground within the social action dimensions of our tradition so that we can actually serve others together? And you might have a very different idea of salvation than me. But that doesn't mean that we can't try to reduce homelessness in our city together. And I think that that's the future. The future isn't arguments over theology or arguments over salvation. The future is common action towards the common good.
Again, you can hear all of the full episodes from which these excerpts came, as well as many more episodes by visiting our website, peacetalksradio.com. That's peacetalksradio.com. For other helpful links and access to all of the programs in our series dating back to 2002. There as well, you can send us your feedback, sign up for a free monthly newsletter, subscribe to a free podcast, and importantly, it's where you can make a tax-deductible contribution to the nonprofit media organization that produces this program with the intent of protecting some of the media landscape for talk about peacemaking on a regular basis. Your support is critical to our survival.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to join the Native American Appreciation Club and Mecha Club in co-sponsoring the First University of Portland Powwow, Saturday, November 16th at 1 p.m. Everyone is welcome to come celebrate and honor Native American Heritage Month. There will be traditional Native and Aztec dancers, singers, drummers, vendors, and more. That's the First University of Portland Powwow to take place at the Child Center, 5000 Willamette Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found on the right-hand side of KBOO.FM under Community Events.
You are tuned to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. The time is about 10:13. Up next, we're going to hear Locus Focus with host Barbara Bernstein. Her guest is independent journalist and climate activist Wen Stevenson. They'll be talking about environmental justice and the fight against tar sands oil extraction and the Keystone Pipeline after this message.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or wilkincpas.com.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. A year ago, Texas activists with tar sands blockade locked themselves to equipment being used to build the Keystone XL pipeline in Nacogdoches, Texas. A year later, the battle over the pipeline is still raging, but we hear less about the dramatic actions that made headlines last year. This morning, we talk with Nation contributing writer and climate activist Wen Stevenson about how the struggle against the tar sands continues as activists in Texas connect the fight against the Keystone pipeline with the struggle for environmental justice. Wen Stevenson is an independent journalist and climate activist at work on a book about climate justice movement. He has written about climate, culture, and politics for the Boston Phoenix, Grist, Slate, the New York Times, and the Boston Globe. He also recently wrote an article called The Grassroots Battle Against Big Oil for The Nation magazine. Welcome to Locus Focus.
Hi there, Barbara. Good to be here.
It's good to have you. In your article in the Nation that was last month, there's a photograph, at least on the website version, that has a big sign that says "No Tar Sands Blockade," and shows people chaining themselves to rather large equipment that was being used to build the Keystone XL Southern Extension pipeline. And I wonder if you could talk about the context for that photo and what it represents about the struggle that was going on just about a year ago.
Sure. Well, you're right. It's a dramatic photo, and it took place at an action along the Keystone southern leg of the Keystone pipeline there outside Nacogdoches, Texas, last fall. And it shows members of Tar Sands Blockade, which is this group of grassroots resistance that sprung up in East Texas in the summer and fall of 2012, last year. It shows them literally locking down to a very large excavator on the pipeline easement with a big banner that says "No Tar Sands." And it was just one example of there were many, many such direct action, actions like this that where members of TSB were.
It's a Tar Sands Blockade, right?
Tar Sands Blockade, exactly, were doing everything they could to impede the progress of the Canadian company TransCanada that is building the pipeline, trying to build it, of course, the whole rest of it, the northern segment, if it gets approved by President Obama. That was just one of those incidents, and really the most, and that was at the same time, probably the most dramatic and sort of iconic image that came out of the Tar Sands Blockade was where it began near Winnsboro, Texas, in sort of the northeastern part of